Hello and welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Sunday, March 26th. Amanda Borchel-Dan here with our editor David Horowitz and military correspondent Emmanuel Fabian. Hello to you both.
Hey, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
There's a lot to update on from a jam-packed weekend, including an explosive speech from Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, a shooting near Harare, resolute remarks from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and security arrangements for the Temple Mount during Ramadan. But before all that, a word from our sponsor.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you care about the war in Israel right now. And you've been reading the headlines. Massacre in Gaza. Genocide perpetrated by Hamas. No, by Israel. But if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know one thing. This stuff seems complicated. And honestly, no one can really just pick a side or decide an opinion without really learning, without really knowing what you're talking about. And that's where this podcast comes in. Check out Unpacking Israeli History, now in its sixth season. They have episodes with topics ranging from what is Hamas anyway, to whether Israel should ransom captured soldiers, and the history of Israel and its disengagement from Gaza in 2005. Unpacking Israeli History cuts through the noise and helps you understand Israel's present through understanding Israel's history. So, educate yourself. Learn the history behind the headlines. Find Unpacking Israeli History wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we're back. Listeners, tonight at 9 p.m. Israel time, we're holding a live discussion between editor David Horowitz and senior analyst Chaviv Retegur. And we're going to try and answer all of your burning questions. It's exclusively for our Times of Israel community, so sign up now and join us tonight. Now, before we dive into the ever-changing political arena, yesterday two Israeli soldiers were wounded in a drive-by shooting attack in the Flashpoint northern West Bank Palestinian town of Harare, where brothers Halel and Yagel Yaniv were killed on February 26. Manny, first of all, tell us how the soldiers are faring right now.
So the two soldiers of the Kfir Brigade who were wounded in the attack are both in stable condition now. They're suffering from moderate injuries. One of them was in serious condition, but has been since upgraded, and they are both recovering at the Belenson Hospital.
Great. That wasn't the final incident, though. What happened after that attack?
So shortly after the attack, the IDF closed several roads in the area and several junctions. And an Israeli man who was trying to reach the settlement of Yitzhar was stopped at the Tapuach Junction. And then the soldiers who stopped him and said he couldn't go through opened fire at his car after he allegedly attempted to bypass the checkpoint somehow. According to the driver, he was shot at five times. Nobody was hurt in the car. And the vehicle was eventually stopped. And the army's investigating whether or not the shooting at the vehicle was justified or not.
Okay, listeners, check the website for updates. Now, David, turning to you, it's been a pretty push-pull weekend for Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who, in light of the growing reservist refusals and murmurings from standing soldiers, was initially scheduled to speak on primetime news on Thursday night, but he held himself back. The dam broke last night, and essentially, what did Gallant say?
The defense minister, a member of the Likud, who, by the way, came to the Likud from another party, Kulanu, so not Likud all the way back, which is significant, perhaps. He was going to speak on Thursday night. He was summoned from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem by Netanyahu and persuaded not to. And it was obviously in the context of the judicial overhaul. And with Netanyahu still in Britain or starting to head back, I guess, last night, Yoav Gallant decided that he had to speak out nonetheless. And really what's striking about what he said, the specifics of what he said is, please, can we pause this legislation? He said he's in favor of reform and a rebalancing of the branches of government is necessary, but it is proving so divisive not only generally in Israel, he said, but within the IDF and Israel's security agencies, to the point where, and this is a quote, this poses a clear, immediate and tangible threat to the security of the state. Now, that's a pretty astonishing thing for the defense minister of the state of Israel to say. He's basically saying that what's going on here, without getting into rights and wrongs, is dangerous to us. And I think that has a whole different order of resonance than almost anybody else speaking publicly. This is not some other minister. This is not an official. This is not some legal authority. This is the person who, under the prime minister, holds prime responsibility for ensuring that this country is able to protect itself and defend itself and face down its enemies. And he's saying our national security is now being undermined. The question now, of course, is what happens? Will Netanyahu, who's heard all of this, you can be certain, in private from Gallant, as well as from the head of the Shin Bet and from the chief of staff of the army, in meetings, parts of which at least have been leaked to the media. So we know he's being told this behind the scenes anyway. Is the public alert issued by the defense minister going to give him pause where the private warnings to the same degree of the same concerns have not stopped him? So, you know, if you're, you know, I guess we'll know soon enough, but really there's nothing new in what Gallant said, and that hasn't stopped Netanyahu, except that he's now said it publicly.
Okay, Manny, can you weigh in a little bit and give some context on the scope of the reserves refusals until now?
Right, so in recent weeks, Gallant has been holding talks with senior military officials, with reservist units, those who have been threatening basically not to show up. So we have the most recent one is 200 pilots are skipping their training this week in order to protest against the overhaul. And if they continue to do this, it will eventually affect their competency, their ability to fly. And that is what military chief Herzi Halevi has been warning Gallant and telling him that at some point there was a report in the New York Times that said that within a month they would have to scale back operations because of the amount of soldiers not showing up for duty or for reservists who are threatening. There's a group representing reservist soldiers who last week announced that they would begin signing on thousands of reservists onto a sort of a declaration that if the overhaul bills are passed, then thousands of soldiers would just stop showing up for duty. We have also intelligence soldiers not showing up, cyber operations soldiers not showing up, and all of that, I think, added to this pressure on Gallant from the side of the army to go out publicly and say this.
When you're talking about not showing up, until now you're talking about reservists, correct? Or is the standing army also seeing some effects of this?
The standing army has not yet seen any major effects. I think there were some reports of some soldiers threatening to you know, not show up, but for them it's a lot more complicated because at least with reservist soldiers, it's voluntary work in a lot of these cases. So if they don't show up, it's not illegal per se. Whereas with the standing army, it would be.
But in some cases, it is actually illegal, is it not, if you refuse to come in for a reserve duty that you're commanded to come in for?
So in the cases where they're commanded to, then it may be illegal. But the reservists who are now threatening, especially the pilots who are saying that they're not going to show up anymore, is all voluntary work. And the cyber soldiers and the intelligence soldiers, it's all voluntary work. So for them to say we're not showing up, it's fine. The units will have to accept them basically saying we're not going to show up. So what these soldiers have been doing has been sending a message to their commanders and saying, hi, next week I'm not showing up for duty. And they just have to accept that as a fact because all of this is really voluntary work.
Now, 200 pilots not coming in. We don't know the actual number of pilots we have in the army. It's classified information, I understand. But is 200 a lot or a little? Or do you have any context?
It's a lot. It's quite a lot. And there was another 1,000 retired Air Force pilots that pledged their support for these 200 reserve pilots. These pilots fly combat missions, fighter jets, also helicopters and transport planes. So it's quite a significant chunk, I would say. We can't say the exact number of pilots. But if 200 pilots, and if they continue to refuse to show up, That could have a heavy impact on the army's readiness to be able to conduct operations. And I think that is what really pushed Gallant to make his public call last night.
His public call, David, was also very personal. He included some family information, including his mother, who is, I believe, a Holocaust survivor and was on the Exodus. Do you feel like that kind of appeal was directed towards Netanyahu or to the Israeli public?
Well, I think he's tried to make an incredibly dramatic statement as potentially consensual as possible. You know, it was a plaintive call from somebody who was presenting it as meeting the essential needs of the state, and anything he could do to make that more widely appealing, I assume, you know, that was his consideration. Stressing that he in principle supports reforms, for example, talking about, he didn't say scrap this, which of course is what Isaac Herzog, the president, said a few weeks ago. He said, just let's postpone this. And he said, you know, until after not only Pesach, but also Remembrance Day for fallen soldiers, after Independence Day, because this is so divisive, you know. So I think that was the goal. It was to try to say something spectacularly incendiary, but to try to do so in a way that would stress that he's seeking consensus here. I'm not sure how successful that has been, but I think, you know, it would have been, you know, more divisive had he presented it differently. In any case, he's being denounced by some members of the coalition who've called to fire him, others who have said that anybody who opposes this legislation, which is due to be enacted, some of it not too many days from now, anyone who doesn't vote for it has finished their time in the Likud. That was something that was said. On the other hand, you've had two other Knesset members backing him overtly. Yuli Edelstein, who chairs the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee. That's quite a significant position. It's the most important Knesset committee, I suppose, in terms of the defense of the country, for sure. And David Bitan, who's a bit of a Likud maverick. It'd be very interesting to know exactly where Avi Dichter, a former head of the Shin Bet, stands ultimately. He might be a natural choice to be defense minister if Netanyahu chooses, rather than to heed Gallant, to fire him. Dichter has privately told Netanyahu he thinks they should pause this legislation, but he hasn't actually said so publicly. So there's a real struggle going on now, and it will play out in the very next few hours and certainly in the next few days.
Okay, we'll go to a short break.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. David, staying with you. On Thursday night, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took to the podium in a speech which he began by laying out the main arguments of the pro and anti-judicial overhaul sides. Then he basically said that the overhaul bills will go through and that he will no longer restrain himself from interfering in the process. What do you make of all of this?
Well, he said that the first of the legislative package will go through this week as planned. It's not a marginal part of the package. It's the core of the package because it gives the coalition almost complete control over the choice of judges throughout the court's hierarchy. In the lower courts, ultimately, with a combination of a remaking of the Judicial Selection Committee and the capacity of the coalition to choose the president and, I believe, the deputy president of the Supreme Court, the coalition could ultimately control all appointments to the lower courts. And in the Supreme Court, it would get to name the first two justices in any Knesset term when seats become vacant on the 15-member bench, to have a significant say in future appointments. So this is overt politicization of the choice of judges and therefore the shattering of the independence of the court. It was interesting that Netanyahu made lots of claims and counterclaims, ostensibly presenting both sides of arguments, but as he has done throughout this process, I would say misrepresenting some of what goes on at present. He and many others keep saying the judges choose themselves. They don't in the selection committee at the moment. The judges and the political majority both have a veto. And therefore, for many years now, justices have been chosen by consensus because neither side in that argument has been able to steamroll appointments through. He made comparisons with Canada and the United States and New Zealand, which he has done in the past. They are imperfect comparisons because there are different contexts at play in those countries, other safeguards. So although it was a relatively magnanimous sounding speech, and he, for example, decided that opponents who have been demonstrating against this package are not traitors, where in the past he has called some of them at least anarchists and compared some of them to rampaging settlers. So there was, you know, there was a moderating of language, but still the bottom line was we're going ahead with this and these are the reasons.
No, the bottom line seemed to be, and I no longer find myself constrained in any way. That seemed to me the most astounding message, no?
Well, it was significant because he has a conflict of interest agreement, which was reached with the state prosecution, which is the basis on which he is allowed to serve as prime minister, even when he is on trial. And under that agreement, he was not to intervene in anything that could directly affect his legal battles. And he was speaking at the end of a day on Thursday, when in the early hours of Thursday morning, the Knesset approved legislation that prevents the High Court from ordering a prime minister to recuse him or herself for reasons pretty much other than health. So in other words, for breaching a conflict of interest agreement, well, according to this law, and it's now a law, Netanyahu could not be required to recuse himself. And he said, that's it. You know, I'm liberated to intervene, as any leader must in a national crisis such as this. And hours after he spoke, so on Friday morning, the Attorney General basically said, no, there is a conflict of interest agreement. You are now in breach of it. And that and any further such conduct can be seen to be contempt of court and so on. So there's, you know, so many aspects of an almighty battle playing out here over ultimately who has the last word, over the capacity of a prime minister to do what he or she wants and the court's capacity to rein that in, all part of the same process. And as you rightly say, a very significant part of his speech on Thursday.
Okay, thanks for that, David. Now, finally, Manny, Ramadan began this weekend. And what do we know about the special measures to ensure peaceful prayer on the Temple Mount?
So if we're going to talk numbers, then on Friday, around 83,000 Muslims prayed on the Temple Mount in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Without any serious incident, it went by pretty peacefully. Around 50,000 of them were Palestinians from the West Bank. Israel has eased a lot of the movement restrictions for Palestinians to enter Israel, or basically to enter Jerusalem specifically for Ramadan. The police in Jerusalem are on heightened alert. There are a lot more cops in Jerusalem now. If you're in Jerusalem, you'll notice that. To ensure that people can come and pray peacefully. There was a minor incident late last night and, you know, early Sunday morning, where a group of young Palestinians tried to remain in the mosque overnight. Police went in and pulled them out, but there wasn't any violence or clashes there. So far, a few days into Ramadan, it's been basically peaceful, and Israel is going to ease these restrictions and hopefully remain eased throughout Ramadan, but there will be assessments throughout the month to see whether or not they can keep to these. I'll just note that also in a rare occurrence, Palestinians from Gaza will also be allowed into Israel, only a few throughout the week, to visit Al-Aqsa Mosque and then sent back to Gaza.
Okay, Manny, thank you for that. And may it be a Ramadan Kareem. David, Manny, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda.
Pleasure. thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
Until next time.
Shalom.